is Northfield Outdoors, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. From hunting to hiking, camping to cooking, mushroom hunting to motorcycling, and so much more, your hosts, Dave Vesladol and Andy Beham, will enlighten, entertain, and inform you with a lively mix of guests and discussion on all things outdoors. And now your hosts, Dave and Andy.
Hey, welcome everyone to another edition of Northfield Outdoors on KYMN 95.1 The One and 1080 AM. Northfield Outdoors is proud to be sponsored by Professional Pride Realty. I'm Dave Vesladol, and alongside me is co-host Andy Beham. How you doing, Andy?
Good. How you doing, Dave?
Trying to stay warm.
Yeah, it's another year where there was just no fall, was there?
No. Put the bikes all away. Sad day.
Yeah. You know,
doing that. I've given up on any thoughts of it. Of a November ride to sneak out there or something.
No, that's not going to happen.
That's gone.
Pull the batteries, you're done.
Yeah. And I assume you're right in the heart of hockey.
Yeah, we just got back. We were down in Marshall for a tournament this last weekend. You know, it's a long, boring drive down there until I got about an hour away and I started thinking about how the fields look pretty good for pheasants.
Yes, so, indeed. Yeah, you know. Put your kids in hockey, you'll see the world.
Yeah, or at least a lot of Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
But, so, yeah, no, it was a good time. It was nice to get back down to Marshall. I hadn't been since we were down for the Governor's Pheasant Opener 2 years ago, and it's about the same.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've got a nice civic center there.
They do. They do.
And a nice ice arena.
Yeah, so. No, it was a good time. How about you?
Well, been getting out a little bit in the, you know, walking in the woods. This is a prime time to be out in the woods and stuff. You know, deer hunting. Gun season is over, except for, well, we got muzzle loading and stuff. But now's the time you see all the deer and the animals. And
Yeah. It's like they almost know. Oh, yeah. I'm a little safer now.
Well, in fact, like today, just driving out of my yard, I had to wait for the deer standing in my driveway.
Yeah.
It's like they are.
It's like my turkey season. I go to my in-laws to turkey hunt, and all but 1 week out of the year, I'm basically kicking them off the front porch, and then all of a sudden they disappear for that 1 week.
That, and I'm packing my truck. I'm getting ready to head out to Montana to do a little duck hunting.
Well, greener pastures?
Yes. My son has been sending me all these pictures of all the ducks they've been getting out there. So it's my annual trip out there.
Yeah.
So I can't wait. Lots of ducks and not many duck hunters.
All right. Well, yeah, you'll have to keep us updated on the next show.
Yep. Hey, Andy, today's show... This is an educational show today, and we were lucky enough to get Jim Flaherty from the gun library at Cabela's, and we're going to be talking guns. It's kind of a basic 101, and so we want to welcome Jim to the show.
Thank you.
So I'm assuming over the years you've just spent enough money in the gun library that he was willing to do this?
Have you been talking to my wife and stuff? Kind of bad when you walk in there, everybody knows you by your first name.
Oh, it's a great place to browse and to buy. So,
all right. Dave may have traded a firearm or two over the years.
I think I may have been at the banquets where he won those ones he traded in.
Yeah,
it's possible. It's good.
I've got a new stack I should probably
bring in.
But, hey, Jim, for everybody out there, why don't you start out, why don't you give us just a little bit of your background before we get into our subject of the day, which is all basics about guns. But you've got quite a background, and so I would consider you an expert.
Well, for the last 20-plus years, I have worked at Cabela's, and I think it's probably been about 15 years in the gun library. And we have just about any kind of firearm you can imagine will come in at one time or another. And we will evaluate the firearm, do a little research it, history on the firearm if there is any, or the type of firearm, and then grade it and condition it, and in most cases make an offer to purchase the firearm or at least let the customer know what their gun is worth.
I know it's always kind of fun to walk in there and look at some of the guns you've got in there. Some of them are perhaps a little out of my price range, but you've got some neat stuff.
Yeah, I enjoy the history of the firearms probably as much as you know, the shooting sports itself. When you think about the last 250 years in this country, just the history, the different types of guns. I mean, I've been able to handle stuff that were Lewis and Clark brought with. You know, the same type of firearm, and you know that's pretty. I mean, that's me. I enjoy that.
Yeah.
You know, Andy, I was down there and I was taking a look in the gun library, and you had one. It was a 44-40 from the Civil War era.
44 Rimfire.
Yeah, 44 Rimfire.
A Henry Rimfire. Yeah. In fact, serial number is 7500.
And so that was right during...
During the Civil War, and that particular firearm went to the 3rd Illinois Volunteer Regiment.
And, so, you know, most people, when they think Civil War, they think of the old musket.
Oh, yeah.
One shot. Well, this was on the Union side. It was some issued to, didn't that hold 16 shells?
It would hold 16 shells, and it was known as that damn Yankee gun you could load on Sunday and shoot all week.
Yeah. can you imagine that? You know,
lining up with your musket and seeing that across the other line? Yeah, no, I don't think so. Yeah.
If you were very good with a musket or muzzle-loading rifle, you could maybe get 3 shots off in a minute where the person with that Henry could get off 16 to 18 rounds in a minute. So that, you know, it changed the face of how war was fought.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's start out with talking about shotguns.
All right.
In particular, you know, why does a person want a shotgun for different hunting, especially around in southern Minnesota? Yeah.
In Minnesota, a shotgun is probably your most practical firearm because you can go duck hunting with it, you can go squirrel hunting, rabbit hunting, you can go pheasant hunting with it, you can put a slug barrel on it, or if it's a smoothbore, you can deer hunt with it. Just by changing chokes, you can do anything from shooting doves to turkeys. Change the choke again, put in a rifle choke, and you can go deer hunting with it. So it's just a very versatile firearm. And if you could only have one firearm in Minnesota, you'd probably want to go with... I would choose a Benelli Super Black Eagle because I can shoot 2 3/4-inch, 3-inch, 3.5-inch shells, any size shot or slug I want.
I'm a big fan of the Benelli, but I'd like to know how many of our listeners out there that the Remington 870 Express was their first gun they owned.
it's probably one of the most popular ones. And being in the gun library, I mean, we were in the collecting side too. Yep. And the early 870s from the 60s are becoming quite popular.
Oh, yeah.
If you've got a 28-gauge vent rib or solid rib 870 that's from, you know, 1965, 66, that's become quite valuable firearm. Just because there's not... The less of something there is, the more value it is, and there were less of those made.
You know, Andy, you bring up a good point. You're right. Growing up, it seems like everybody, that was one of their first shotguns that they had.
It was a workhorse. Yeah. I know that mine has been run over by a car in a field, or by a truck in a field, and it's still shot just fine.
Yeah. Yeah. If you went back to the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, people had Winchester Model 12s. And as Winchester faded out under Model 12, the 870 just happened to come in at about the same time, and it took over that spot in the... not a cheap gun as far as quality, but price-wise, it's in the lower end of the price scale.
Yeah.
You know, a good, solid gun that you really can't break.
Yeah.
I'm real partial now, of course, to... I've got a Winchester Super X4 that I just love. That seems to be very versatile for myself. But
I'm one of those terrible people. I just don't have any semi-auto shotguns. I think just about everything. I have a bolt action for slug hunting, and everything else I have are side-by-side shotguns, just because that's what I enjoy, and that's what it gets down to.
Well, you know, we should get into that. When you're taking a look at shotguns, you know, we talk pump action, semi-automatic, break action. Just give us a rundown. What do we mean by those phrases, and what's the differences in them?
Well, a semi-automatic is pretty much what it says. They will hold 3 to 5 shells. If you're waterfowl hunting, you can only have 1 in the chamber and 2 in the magazine, so they'll come with a little plug to fill the magazine up so you can't put too many shells in it accidentally or on purpose. And it's hard to get a, you know, very efficient. The modern semi-autos, the recoil is lightened up as
it really
they have
has.
Different systems in them. Gas systems, inertia systems, just how they operate. The recoil has gotten easier. Just good quality guns. Probably the most popular is probably still the pump action shotgun. And you can get a pump action shotgun brand new for, you know, probably there'll be some Christmas deals coming up for probably $250 for a brand new 12-gauge shotgun. That may not be a beautiful firearm with high-grade walnut, but it's a very user-friendly firearm that'll last you forever. Take care of it.
They're almost indestructible, some of these.
It's hard to shoot. It's hard to hurt a gun by shooting it.
Yep.
I mean, that's what they're made for. And most shotguns are made to have 50 to 100,000 rounds put through them, and the average person in their life will probably not put more than 500 to 1,000 unless they're out trap shooting, skeet shooting, sporting clays. But in the field, 1,000 rounds is a lot of rounds.
Yes.
There's also break action shotguns, either over under, which are superposed just by the barrels being on top of each other, are side by side and self-explanatory there. And there's single shots, and then you'll get some obscure ones, you know, drillings and verlings, which are three barrels, four barrels, five barrels, but you don't see many of those here. That's more of a European thing, where Europe, you go hunting, they'll say, today we're going to shoot two pigs, five pheasants, and four quail, and you only bring one gun with. Here, if it's two pheasants, you're going to bring one gun with.
Right. Yeah.
So, and 12 shots.
With the break actions now, the over-under seems to be the popular gun.
Yeah, the over-under, I mean, the Brownings
are
good quality.
And why is that versus the side-by-side?
Marketing. I mean, it's as much as anything.
I mean, I prefer to shoot an over-and-under versus a side-by-side, but that's a personal preference. Well,
and if you put a 28-inch side-by-side, a 28-inch pump action, a 28-inch over-under right next to each other, they're going to be different lengths. The side-by-side is probably, or a single shot, is going to be the shortest because the barrels go back into the action farther. The Browning, or the over-under is going to be next. Single shot's going to be right in there. But you get a pump, it's going to be longer because it just takes more of the receiver to get. The barrel is completely in front of the receiver, or the action, where with your side-by-sides and over-unders, it actually goes into the action by a couple of inches.
Are the side-by-side more of a nostalgic? Do you feel, I hate to say this, seasoned people, older people?
I mean, for me, it's just the fit. The fit works better for me.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're going to go out and buy a shotgun, I recommend you go wherever you're going to go, go up to the counter, say you want to look at a pump shotgun, point to a particular one, close your eyes, put the gun up. And now open your eyes. If you're not seeing down the rib or you're not seeing the front bead, go to the next shotgun.
Okay.
Because it doesn't matter how inexpensive it is if it doesn't fit or how expensive it is. If the gun doesn't fit, the gun doesn't fit, and it's not going to be a useful tool for you.
Now, Andy, you said you shoot a Benelli, right?
Yeah.
I had a Benelli. And to Jim's point, it didn't fit me. I mean, I spent the money on it and thought it was great, went out and shot, it just didn't feel right.
Yeah, and to that point, when
and
it comes
people
to
look
it,
at me
how
when
it
I
feels,
say that.
I've gone through three over-unders in my life, and my favorite still has been the Savage that I probably paid about $450 bucks for, and it just fit me right. Yeah. Versus, you know, you can get some of these high-end ornate ones that the price will be triple, quadruple, or more.
I've got a Browning Satori over and under, and I've had that for, oh gosh, Jim, I think I bought that about 20 years, oh, more than that, 25 years ago, and I've always used that for skeet shooting.
Yep. What you'll find is with that Satori, whether it's a field grade one or a custom shop gun that's $12,000, the only thing
my wife is listening, I do not have the custom.
he meant $1,200.
Yeah. The only difference is fit and finish.
Yep.
The quality of the wood, the level of engraving. I mean, some of it is beyond engraving. It's art. And that's some of what I enjoy, too, where I get to photograph all the guns we have come in and put them online. And, I mean, some of the stuff that comes in is just unbelievable. My eyes would explode if I tried to do that. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
After the first 10 minutes, I'd be cussing and hacking at it and die.
hey, Jim, talk a little bit about the various gauges. You just mentioned that. What does that mean when we're talking gauges and shotguns?
Well, gauges in English measurement. So, of course, being English, it's going to be goofy somehow. But a 12 gauge would be if you had 1 pound of lead and made 12 equal size balls of it, it would be 0.072 inches.
Okay.
So there'd be 12 balls to equal 1 pound, so you have a 12 gauge. If you made the ball smaller and there were 20 of them, you'd have a 20 gauge, 16 gauge. The only thing that doesn't run on a gauge is a 410, and that's an actual bore. So that's 0.4 of an inch.
So that's the one that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the English probably didn't mess with that one.
Yeah.
So, but everything else is gauge. And, you know, back in the old days, they did market hunting, and they had four-bore shotguns and eight-bore shotguns. Those are no longer legal for hunting in this country. But we still sell a fair amount of 10-gauge shotguns that shoot a 3.5-inch shell. And if you need to hit a goose at 70 yards, that's probably what you're going to want to go with. I use, it's sacrilege to a lot of people, but I use a Winchester Model 21. I put a set of skeet barrels on it and shoot 5 and 6 shot steel through it for ducks and geese. And it works. So,
you know, I happen to have, and I shouldn't be saying this because my wife might be listening, but I actually have a Winchester Model 1901. 10-gauge. It's
yep,
a lever action.
Yep.
And I think that was only made for roughly 20 years.
Yeah, it was fairly short run. It looks almost like an egg.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
And, I found some shells because it takes a 2 7/8 inch shell. There's a guy down in Texas I order them from. But I can kind of see, because it's a working gun yet.
Well, they were railroad guns. They kept them on the trains because the trains didn't have refrigeration. So they would have that gun and... There's a bird. Boom. Now we got dinner.
Yep. But it is a little strange with being a lever-action shotgun
to actually
shoot that stuff. And I think part of its fame comes from, I think it was the first Terminator movie.
Yes.
I believe, didn't Arnold take that and saw the barrel off and riding the motorcycle?
Well, in the 1883 is the same design.
Okay.
So, but... came out a little earlier and not quite as functional.
So.
But and the difference in gauges is if you're going to go duck hunting, whatever, in most cases you're going to use a 10 or a 12 gauge. A lot of people for upland, you know, or grouse, whatever, they want to go with a 16 gauge because there is a little nostalgia. But a 20 gauge will do anything a 16 will do. And I like for grouse, I use a 28 gauge. And I've used a 28 gauge for pheasant, but you got to use a little bigger shot in it. And I can't hit anything with a 410, so it doesn't matter.
So. Yeah, in fact, talking about the 410, Winchester one time took their, didn't they take their Model 94 and do some
9410?
Yeah, made a 9410 out of it, so that became a lever action.
Yep, that and the first lever action 410 was actually made by Marlin.
Oh,
and the only way you could get it was back in the 30s. You had to be a stockholder for, and you had to have a minimum of 4 shares, and then you could buy one. And we actually have one in the library right now, and it's probably $2,500 because there's only 4,000 of them ever made. So, again, less is more.
May put that on my Christmas list.
Speaking of 410s, I know, and now there's a couple, they're making a couple handguns that'll take 410s. I know Smith & Wesson makes one, Taurus makes one.
Yeah, but the one difference is they do have rifling in them.
Yep.
Otherwise, it's considered a short-barreled shotgun, and it's not legal.
Oh, okay.
So they do have to have rifling in there, and it's made as much as anything just for, you know, snake protection in the desert.
Yep.
But it would probably work for home defense, but that's just not my deal.
Yep.
So.
Jim, let's talk a little bit about the shotgun cells, the size, and then let's get into a little bit more about the you've talked a little bit about this, about the different shot size, but shotgun shells come in different lengths.
In a 10-gauge, your most common is going to be a 3.5-inch. In a 12-gauge, you're going to have you're going to have 2 3/4, 3 3.5-inch. Though some of the older shotguns did have 2.5-inch shells, and some of the English guns even had 2-inch shells and 1 7/8-inch shells. And if you find one of those shotguns, you can still get shells for them. I mean, it's not an impossible thing, and if you know a reloader, they can cut shells down and reload for you. 20-gauge, in most cases, can be 2 3/4 or 3-inch. 16-gauge is going to be 2 3/4 or 2 5/8-inch. And 410s are anywhere from 2 2.5 to 3-inch shells. And if you're going to go upland hunting with a 16-gauge, a 2 3/4 is nice. Grouse hunting, you're usually going to be a little closer, a little open, more open pattern, so the slightly shorter. You hear about the Browning Sweet 16. Those early guns were 2 5/8-inch shells, so they're a little harder to find ammo for, but it's not impossible.
You know, Andy, I don't know about you, but there's been times I've actually tried the 3.5-inch shells.
Yeah.
Your shoulder gets sore shooting that.
One of the biggest mistakes I made is we went out and we had an old box of clay that we were going to get rid of, and we decided all of our duck and goose shells, we didn't trust them anymore. You know, they're a couple years old. So we decided to use those on the clay. We had some 3.5-inch. It looked like a rainbow across my shoulder the next day.
Yeah, anybody that's ever turkey hunted, if you can shoot a 2 3/4-inch turkey load, you can shoot a 375 H&H rifle.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what about the different shot size?
Shot size, the bigger the number, the smaller the shot.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yeah, yeah. It's an English thing, yeah, trust me. So, and like a 9-shot is usually what's going to be used for skeet, can be used for grouse or squirrels, that type of stuff. And that's a fairly fine shot. And you're probably in the 500, somewhere in there, pellets per ounce. The most common hunting sizes are probably going to be your 4s and 5s, some 6s. But 4s and 5s are the most common. If you're going to trap or skeet shoot, you're going to be using 9s. 8s, 7.5s, 7s.
I know when I was skeet shooting a lot, most everybody was shooting 7.5s.
Yep.
That seemed pretty common.
I can shoot trap pretty well, but for skeet, you give me a 10 gauge with 11 shot, I'd still miss them. So I don't know. There's something about those evil skeets I don't get the timing on. But trap is, that seems easy to me.
Yeah.
So I guess it's all practice as much as anything. So
when you get down to what they call a BB.
A BB, size. It's going to be a 177, so that's a pretty good size. And after you get down to your one shot, then you'll go to Bs, BBs, triple Bs, and then you go Ts and TTs. And those are big shot. And then after that, you'll get into your buck shot, which goes from a 0 to a 4. And a 4 buck is a good sized chunk of steel going down range, or chunk of lead going down range.
I know Andy, when went out snow goose hunting, the guide out there, what he recommended was 3-inch BBs.
Yep.
3-inch shell with BBs, because he said you're going to have some high shots. And some people had the 3.5-inch, but were shooting like 2-shot. They thought that was better than a 3-inch with a BB. I don't know.
Weight is energy.
Yep.
So the weight of the, you know, the pellet itself coming out translates into the energy downrange. So.
And don't they do some shells where it's a blend of different sizes in there also?
They will do that more for turkeys. They'll use what's called a matrix. And in Minnesota, I think the largest shot you can use is a 4-shot. So they'll have a mix of 6s and 4s together.
Yep.
And the 4s, if it happens to be close, but the 6 will carry a little farther down, down the range. And they do work well. I've shot those before, and they're, I don't notice a difference, but
yeah,
I'm probably not a connoisseur of fine.
I'm one of those people, I can be sold really easy on things. Oh, yeah, this will help. It's the same way when I'm out buying a new golf club. Maybe I should learn how to golf.
Well, for example, I like to shoot the Prairie Storm.
Yep.
And that's got the BBs, but some with the, like the, how should we say, sharp edges to them.
Yeah. They're kind of like a hexagon type shape, aren't they?
Yeah. And I don't know if it makes a big difference, but just maybe I was an easy ploy for the marketing of it. I don't know. What's your thoughts, Jim? Jim's looking at me right now.
Nah.
Yeah, you're the kind of guy they want to market.
Yeah.
I think if a goose flies by and you hit him in the forehead with a 6-shot, he's going to fall down.
He's going to fall out.
So, and that may sound a little, but I happen to live out in the country where once in a while the geese just fly over, and I use 2 3/4-inch 6-shot steel.
Yep.
And they fall down. You know, if you lead them properly and you're not trying to reach up to 60, 70 yards, it all depends where you live in the environment. You know, ducks and pheasants and grouse, they die fairly easily.
And what about the different materials that are used in BBs? You know, we talk lead, we talk steel, but there's also others.
Yeah, a vast majority of trap loads, skeet loads, and field loads are lead. And then steel is becoming more and more popular because it's mandated by federal law. You can't hunt waterfowl with lead. You have to use steel or tungsten or a tungsten matrix. And a tungsten matrix is just basically plastic and tungsten powder mixed together, so you get the weight of the tungsten and it's not as aggressive. Tungsten can be kind of rough on a barrel. If you shoot tungsten through a full choke, you're going to tear the end of your gun up.
Are there other materials, too, that they're played around with?
Well, there's bismuth, which is... And I don't know a lot. I mean, I have used it. I've got some four-shot bismuth at home I only bought because I wanted the weight. And that's 28-gauge. Strange, but it works pretty well. And just in case I happen to have a 28-gauge and there's ducks, I can use the bismuth in that, and it is legal for waterfowl.
So. It is. Okay. Do you have a preference, especially hunting waterfowl? Is it the steel? Or?
Yeah, I use either 4 or 6 shot steel in most cases. Steel. And I'm using 2 3/4 inch. So, because I'm using, well, the shotgun I use most of the time was built in the early, I think about 1953. So, and shotguns don't wear out. I mean, they just, they're made to be used, so utilize them. And if you have an older classic gun that is fairly expensive, costs a lot less to send it in every 10 years and get it refinished than it does to buy a new one.
Sure. Now, I tend to waterfowl hunting, Andy, use a 3-inch shell but with a 5-shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Throwing a couple more BBs out there sometimes.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, for pheasants, I'll usually go with a 6-shot. And again, a 2 3/4, I just don't have anything except for a slug gun that shoots anything over 2 3/4 inch. So,
and before we go to break and move off of shotguns, talk just a little bit about chokes. What is the purpose of a choke in a shotgun, and what does it do? Why does it offer different varieties?
Well, as the English say, the Americans are the only country in the world obsessed with chokes and quality of wood. If the English want to use a tighter...
Let's not broadcast the show over in England.
If you want a gun that you're going to shoot farther with tighter chokes, you just buy a new gun. So you have two guns instead of one.
That's the philosophy I've tried to live with.
But what the choke does is it restricts the end of the barrel, and a tight choke, being a full choke or a turkey choke, will give you a very tight pattern out at about 30 yards. You may only be a foot, foot and a half pattern, where a skeet choke, which is wide open, about 3 to 5 thousandths restriction, will give you maybe a 60 to 70 inch pattern at 30 yards. Skeet choke's made for shooting at 18 yards. I mean, that's what it's made for. The older shotguns, they were actually overbore some, so instead of any restriction, you might be 5, 6, 7 thousand over your cylinder. But the most common is probably going to be a modified. You don't want to run steel through a tight full choke because you run the risk of harming the gun itself, because the steel in the pellets may be harder than the steel in the choke, and something's going to give at some point. So if you run, in most cases, a modified, improved cylinder, improved modified choke, you'll be able to do anything for upland, birds, waterfowl, small game. You'll be just fine. If you're going to shoot slugs, then you're going to want to go to, and you don't want to put in a rifled slug, then you just go with an improved cylinder and a rifled slug. And if you want to shoot sabots, which are supposedly more accurate, then you just put in a rifle choke tube.
So. Let's go ahead, take a break, hear from our sponsor. When we come back, let's take a moment. We can dive a little more into the slugs and sabots and some of that with shotguns, work our way into some rifles, and give you a little more information here.
Professional Pride Realty is a proud sponsor of Northfield Outdoors on 95 The One. Let the staff and realtors at Professional Pride help you make coming indoors from the outdoors a welcoming experience in the home that's right for you. The realtors at Professional Pride are local and know the Northfield market. Whether it's buying your first home, upgrading from your current home, or purchasing your own slice of the outdoors, let Professional Pride help you every step of the way. To learn more, check them out on Facebook or at ProfessionalPrideRealty.com. Keep enjoying the outdoors and let Professional Pride worry about your indoors.
Welcome back. Hey, we've been talking with Jim Flaherty from the Gun Library at Cabela's, and you are listening to Northfield Outdoors on KYMN 95.1 The One and 1080 AM. Jim, just before we move on to rifles, let's talk just a little bit. You mentioned different slugs.
Slugs.
Because we live in southern Minnesota, we have to use shotguns to hunt deer around here. I use a... When I'm out, I've got a Mossberg pump with a rifled barrel, and okay. I use Sabots in that.
Correct.
And so, but there's rifled barrels and shotguns, smooth barrels, and you could get a rifled choke. But talk a little bit about slugs.
Okay. If you have a rifled barrel, then you want to shoot a saboted slug. And what you've got is a slug with a plastic sleeve around it, and the plastic sleeve will catch your rifle and put the rotation on the bullet. If you have a smooth bore, then you want to use a rifled slug because the rifling in the slug will catch the smooth on the shotgun and give the spin to the bullet. If you put a rifled slug in a rifled barrel, they're going to fight each other, and they're probably not going to be as accurate. So all you have to know is if you have a smooth bore, you want a rifled slug. If you have a rifled bore, you want a smooth slug.
And what type of distance for accuracy?
Probably the most accurate slug gun I ever had was a Remington 1100 20 gauge. And I put deer down at over 125 yards with it. You start to get significant drop in a 12 gauge just because you've got an ounce of lead to an ounce and a quarter of lead going out there. Once you get much beyond 75 to 100 yards. So, and slugs were not made to shoot 200 yards. I mean, it's not that it's impossible, but there's not a lot of places you're going to find 200-yard shot in Minnesota down here.
You know, I had an old side-by-side Stevens, and it was a 12-gauge. But the only way I could remember which side I could shoot a slug through, I'd take a dime and put, if it was real tight, that was a full choke. And so I couldn't put a slug through that
right.
side. Was that kind of an old trick?
Yeah, a dime will not go, it shouldn't go into a full choke. I'm not going to say it won't, but it shouldn't.
Yeah.
So now I have one guy I work with that uses an over-under, and he says one shot over the deer, one shot under the deer. So,
Is there, when it comes with for deer hunting and slugs, do you see any difference in accuracy for a pump versus, say, a bolt action or a single shot?
In most cases, a bolt action is probably going to be your most accurate. Well, a single shot should be.
Yep.
Because everything is the same every time. A bolt action after that and a pump would be your third. But at most distances in Minnesota where you're looking at 20 to 50 yards, it should not really be a factor. My eyes are not so good anymore, so I put either a red dot scope on or a low-powered rifle scope on, and that helps my eyes.
Yep.
I mean, I just can't see the front sight, the rear sight, and the deer anymore all at once.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it gets to be harder and harder every year looking down at some just pure iron.
Yes, as I'm putting my cheaters on so I could take a look at my next notes.
Yeah.
Hey, Jim, let's move on to rifles. There's a... Yeah, different types of rifles, everything from a bolt action, you'll hear that, lever action, pump, semi-auto. Again, give us just a brief description of what those different types of rifles are, and we're really just talking hunting
right.
rifles here. I know there's a lot of other things we could
right.
get into, but those four basics, you know, what are the pros and cons kind of each?
Yeah, well, the fastest you can get two shots off would be a side-by-side double rifle, and that's going to be a breech action, breech open. There's just nothing faster in the world, but there's not a lot of elephant charges around here and rhinos, so, I mean, you probably don't need to quite go there. But if you need one.
Yes.
If you're being charged by a rhino, it'd be handy.
Well, I do have that empty space in the gun cabinet.
Yeah.
Oh, have I got a deal for you?
Again, nice, Jody, we're just kidding.
Yeah,
real nice 470 Nitro Express. Now, a bolt action is probably your most common as far as longer range hunting. And I'll say longer range, 200 yards to 500 yards. And that's a long ways. And people that think they're shooting 500 yards need to bring a rangefinder
yep.
with. Because 500 yards is a long, long ways.
Yeah.
And you need everything to be right for that shot to work out. But a bolt action is accurate. It's consistent. you know, recoil is going to be the same on just about anything. A lever action rifle, usually you're going to be a little slower cartridge, a little heavier bullet. You know, you look at, say, the most common lever action is a Winchester 94-30-30. Or 30 Winchester center fire. I mean, it's been around forever, and it works.
And that was kind of the northern Minnesota gun.
Yeah, I mean, I always tease my buddies in Wisconsin that it's state law that you have to use your first deer with a 30-30.
Yes.
And there have been millions upon millions of whitetail taken with 30-30s. It's a great cartridge.
Is it more of a brush gun? Would be a lever action for the quick...
I don't think there's any such thing as a brush gun. You shouldn't be shooting into the brush. So. Yeah. Wait till you have an open shot
but
and
I mean,
take it.
Walking, you know.
Yeah, walking, they're nice because they have a 20-inch barrel, a little shorter barrel, easier to get through the woods, you know, the brush and the junk.
Yep.
But, you know, brush gun is one of those, it's like sound shots. They're not good things.
No. So, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking more about walking through that stuff. Yeah, you can quickly pull up that lighter gun, shorter barrel.
And, you know, they don't necessarily come with a rifle sling, but a rifle sling is a nice accessory when you're going through the junk. So we got bolt action, we got lever, there are semi-auto rifles. They're not as popular in Minnesota as they are other places, but a lot of places, I mean, that's, as strange as it sounds, California just cannot get enough semi-automatic rifles that only hold 3-4 rounds, so you don't have to worry about the laws, but they're just very popular out there for some reason. Older Browning semi-auto rifles.
Do you see that, Jim, where it's almost regional someplace? Again, northern Minnesota, hunting there, Wisconsin, seems like the lever actions are the real popular. Hunting out west, definitely bolt actions.
Bolt action,
but then you head to other parts of the country. Is it just a matter of taste sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably what they're, you know, out in Pennsylvania, they buy more drillings in Pennsylvania than anywhere else. But I think a lot of that is maybe four or five generation old German heritage.
Yeah.
And most of the drillings, not all, but most of them are German made. And I think it's just something they enjoy. Their grandfather had one. They have to have one, and they can still.
How many of us learned to shoot on our dad's gun that used to be our grandpa's gun?
So explain what drilling.
A drilling is going to have two shotgun barrels and a rifle barrel. Shotgun will be side by side, and the rifle barrel will be down below that. So, and that's again more of a European where you're going to go out and shoot X amount of each species with one firearm.
When I was a kid. Hunting squirrels, we had it was the 20 gauge and the 22.
Yep.
The Savage Model 24. Probably.
You got it right there.
And they're still very popular. Yep. 22 over 410, but you know they've expanded those to have like 222s or 223s over 12 gauge or 30-30 in a 12 gauge. There's just a wide array, and people really seem to like those. And that's a break gun, so, and it is pretty handy in the woods.
Yeah, you can take a rabbit on the ground, and you can get a little better beat on a squirrel up on a branch. Yeah,
exactly.
Or you can get a rabbit and then the deer. I mean, you know, it's pretty, most of them were full choke, so you'd want to bring it somewhere and maybe have the choke opened a little bit. But
I was like Davy Crockett out in the woods, bringing the wild game home to supply a meal. I'd come home with a squirrel.
Yeah.
You know, mom would look, jeez.
Here we go. Yeah.
Not my favorite. But a lot of people like them. I mean, it doesn't matter to me what people like to hunt. I mean, just I enjoy being out in the woods and watching the world go by as much as anything.
Big difference in price ranges on those different things?
Well, in most cases.
On any one of these, you can spend a lot of money.
In a bolt-action rifle, you can get a very good quality bolt-action rifle now in the $500 range, brand new. Or you can go out and find a 60-year-old one that's made in England or, you know, Ireland or, you know, somewhere in Europe and spend $75,000 on it. You know, it really depends what you want, but you can get a Savage gun. They said they're not the most elegant looking guns. We kind of joke around that, you know, they're ugly as a mud fence, but they do shoot straight. And when it gets right down to it and you're up in a tree stand or you're out in Wyoming and you see that antelope at 300 yards, whatever, doesn't matter how pretty the gun is.
No.
So,
Did you hear that, Hayes? We're going antelope hunting next year.
Oh, excellent.
300 yards, Hayes.
That's where I hunt. That would be probably a little less than average. I mean, it's a lot of 300 to 500 yeah. foot shots. And
I think one of the greatest, I was watching the Pursuit Channel or one of those where they had, it was a ex-Navy SEAL sniper that was on, they were mule deer hunting in the Badlands. And they take a shot, and I want to say he was shooting a 50 caliber at this point. Mm. It was about a mile-long shot, and you see the deer fall, and then they all scattered, because it was down before the sound of the shot got there.
Yeah, I was in South Africa, and there was a person from Texas that was hunting, and I saw him shooting at a springbok that was 700 yards out. And I was about 500 yards behind him, but I saw the animal fall. Heard a bang, and then heard the thwack when the bullet hit it, in that order.
Okay, here's one that I think people do struggle with a little bit when we're talking about ammunition and the different measurements used. We're talking both metrics, and we're talking imperial. Jim, I'm going to throw it to you to explain it all to us. You know, what's the difference between why is something called a 30-06, something called a 30-30, and something called a 9mm?
All right, well, 30-06 is easy. That is a 30 caliber designed in 1906. That's an easy one. A 30-30 originally would have been a 30 caliber bullet and 30 grains of black powder. 45-70 would have been a 45 caliber bullet, 70 grains of black powder. Then they got into modern powders, and they just started naming their cartridges. The difference between a 9.3 millimeter is going to be equivalent to a 375 bullet.
Is it because some of those...
The 9.3 would be a European designation.
A European, but it was created there, so they were using millimeter.
Correct.
Versus just, a 30-06 right. Yeah. was created here.
Like my kids learned how to shoot on a 17 HMR.
Yeah.
Go ahead. And
17 HMR is a 17 caliber.
Yep.
Hornaday Magnum rimfire.
Yep. So they just started naming them.
So, yeah. Right. So they just started naming them. And there's also a 17 Mach 2. 17 HMR is a 22 Magnum shell neck down. So they restrict the neck down smaller and put in a 17 caliber bullet. And then there's a 17 Mach 2, which is a 17 caliber in a 22 long rifle. So it's a shorter shell. The exact same bullet.
Yep.
Just different velocities.
Yep.
And, ammunition, it's kind of strange. It genuinely is rocket science. And it's something that a lot of people reload their own. And there are manuals out there. And you don't want to make it up as you go along because you can get hurt bad.
Yeah.
Because you can have two gunpowders that look exactly the same, but one may burn three times faster than the other, so you're going to get higher pressures. Bad things can happen.
So the simplest way to, if someone is asking, I don't understand why one bullet is called this and another is called this.
Correct. If you look at a 7.62 is 30 caliber. So if they're seeing a European rifle that's a 7.62 by whether it be 39, 55, whatever, and the second measurement in a European, the 7.62 by 39 would be 39 millimeter case, by 55 would be a 55 millimeter case, so naturally it's going to hold more powder. In the U.S., there's probably 75 different 30 caliber rounds out there.
Isn't that amazing?
From, in rifles from an M1 carbine that they used in World War II. But in Korea, it didn't work because the vest that they wore, it wouldn't go through the vest. It was a pretty anemic round, but it was a good cover fire round. In the same war, they also used the 30-06, which was in the M1 Garand, which was the greatest battle rifle ever, according to George Patton. So 30 caliber is not necessarily, not everything is equal.
And just to complicate it a little more, I shoot a 30-06, but I shoot two different grains of it. I've got 150 grain or 180 grain. Yep. So explain what that means in what the grain.
Well, your 150 grain is going to be faster out of the muzzle, It's probably going to fly a little flatter for a little bit farther, but it's going to have less kinetic energy once you get downrange. The 180 grain bullet is going to be slower, but it's going to carry its energy much farther. And just the, you know, like I said, I'm not a rocket scientist, or I probably wouldn't be here, but it all translates into energy, and you'll see, you know, one deer gets hit and it's like nothing happened. The next one gets hit and it just falls down. And that's got to do with shot placement and the bullet. You know, a hollow point bullet's going to open up and unleash all of its energy instantly. Where a more solid, still expanding bullet, but doesn't expand as much, is not going to release all of its energy. Ideally, if you hit a shoot a deer in one side, it should stop under the skin on the other side. If it goes all the way through, you didn't use all your energy.
Okay. And as we're getting close to running out of time here, when the person hears the word ballistics, what give us a quick definition of ballistics?
Ballistics are from when it leaves your muzzle, and I guess the best way I can explain it is you always hear people say a bullet rises. Well, a bullet does not rise, just that the sights and the barrel are at a slight angle to each other. So there's no magic bullet that comes out, rises 2 inches, and goes through the trajectory. But if you're going, there are ballistic calculators. You can go online, and it is rocket science. So you need to know your muzzle velocity, your bullet weight, and your ballistic coefficiency. And the coefficiency is how easily the bullet flies through the air. Your velocity, of course, is the speed it's going. And you can punch all of those into a calculator, and you can get what's called a maximum point-blank range, which means as the bullet leaves the muzzle, you don't want it, let's say you want to be able to hit a 6-inch circle. And you don't care how far that 6-inch circle is, but you want to hit a 6-inch circle. So you want to have your rifle sighted in so it's no more than 3 inches high at any type in the flight. And your maximum point-blank range will be the distance where it's gone to 3 inches high and then it's come to 3 inches low again. So depending on your 150-grain bullet is going to have your maximum point-blank range is going to be out farther than your 180-grain bullet, because the speed involved, the smaller bullet's not going to have as good a coefficiency, but the speed's probably going to make up for it.
Okay.
Like I said, I have one particular rifle from the muzzle to 426 inches is no more than 4 inches high or 4 inches low. So, and that's my antelope rifle. Okay. So,
all right. So. Well, if anyone listening is, you know, interested in getting into hunting, where would you tell them to start with a gun? What should they start looking at? And I know that's a loaded question, because what kind of hunting is it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if they're going to plan on just doing small game and birds, get the best shotgun they can afford to buy. Yeah. If it's going to be a rifle, if you want to spend, you know, again, if you want to spend $1,000 total, get a $500 rifle and put a $500 scope on it. If you spend the same amount on your rifle as you do on your glass as you do the rifle, you'll be well served. And if 10 years down the road you want to sell the rifle, keep the scope.
There you go.
Put a new, you know, then you can go out and buy a $1,000 rifle and put your $500 scope on it, and you'll be in good shape.
Good advice right there.
You know, we could almost do a whole show optics and scopes and stuff. We all have our favorites, you know.
No, I just bought a new rifle, new for me, a couple weeks ago, so I've got 6 scope laid out on the table deciding which one to put on.
Well, Tom, who works down at the Cabela's, he convinced me with to go with a Leopold scope on the most recent rifle
I bought.
And I've had Leopolds before. I'm not saying that's better than anything else, but it's just there's also a comfort level in that.
Correct. Yeah. They're not... I mean, we brought in a rifle the other day that a customer brought in, and the scope was $3,500 if you want to replace it. So that's a lot of glass.
Yeah it is.
But I like your comment about spending as much on optics as you do on the gun itself.
It doesn't do any good to buy a great rifle if you can't see your target.
Yeah.
So, and the cheapest part of the hunt, in every case, is your ammunition. So don't buy junk.
Yes.
All right. Well, Jim, it's been very interesting and very informative, and hopefully, I know I've learned some things. All of our listeners have.
Yeah, this is a basics 101 that I think people should listen to, especially if they're newer to the sport of shooting.
Yeah. Well, as interesting as it has been, we haven't run out of time quite yet. We're getting close, so there is still time for Dave's Interesting Facts.
And, Jim, this is where I test Andy's knowledge.
Oh, I don't get to answer these?
Oh, no, you get to. He tries to stop me and make me look bad.
I'll throw it out to Andy. And then,
when I give the wrong answer, then you give the right one.
So we've been talking a lot about guns, but man's favorite friend is his dog when he's out there hunting. So I've got a few interesting trivia facts about waterfowling dogs. So are you ready for this one, Andy?
I did all my research on guns, and now you're going to come at me with dogs.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So in particular, we're talking about retrievers. How many words can the average retriever learn?
50.
Now, you know what the incorrect answer is, Jim. You want to take a shot at this?
Well, I had a black lab, so that would be a retriever.
Yes.
And all the brains got bred out of that dog generations ago. So I would guess, I have absolutely no idea.
According to Ducks Unlimited, it's 150.
Huh.
If you spend the time, they said you need to spend the time.
Oh, I thought we were talking about my dog.
You know, the nose of most retrieving dogs have listen to this, Andy. Millions of scent receptors.
It's easy for you to say.
How many million scent receptors does the average retriever have? And I'm going to give you another hint.
Oh.
It's 40 times the number that humans have. So if you know what humans have.
7 million.
That is really incorrect.
Oof.
I'll go 22 million.
That's still very incorrect. 200 million.
Really?
I thought that was pretty amazing.
And a black bear is 100 times better than that.
Okay, which dog breed is the state dog of South Carolina?
It's going to be a retriever.
Yep.
I'm going to go Chesapeake Bay.
That is very incorrect.
How about a poodle?
No, that is incorrect. The Boykin Spaniel.
Of course.
So, okay then. I thought we were going with retrievers.
Well, they're considered a retriever.
Oh, are they?
Yes. Yeah, they're part of the retriever family. Okay, one last one. The Golden Retriever is credited with being created and bred by which Scottish Baron?
Seriously?
Yes. Okay.
Von Kilt.
I'll give you a hint. He had a nickname, Lord Tweedmouth. That was his nickname. Does that help?
No. It doesn't help at all. I'd hate to see your internet search history, Dave.
Well, come on. A Golden Retriever is one of the most popular retrievers.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to go with Baron. No, never mind. I got nothing.
Irish, not Scottish. Yeah.
Sir Dudley Majorial Banks.
Oh, of course. All right. Well, on that note, it's time to wrap this show up. Well, thanks again for listening. We'd like to remind you next week to tune in to On Tap with Corey and Ira and find out what interesting facts about beer they have. Maybe they'll be a little less obscure than Dave's. As always, the show will be archived on kymnradio.net and found under Northfield Outdoors. Thank you to Hayes for updating the Northfield Outdoors Facebook page and to Professional Pride Realty for sponsoring Northfield Outdoors. And until next time.
Hey, get out there and enjoy the outdoors, folks. Thank you very much. Thank you, Jim. We appreciate you coming on.
No problem.
Thanks.
This has been Northfield Outdoors with Dave Vesladol and Andy Behem, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. Join Dave and Andy every other Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on 95 The One or streaming at kymnradio.net.